I'm going to sort of go through a lot of things quickly, which is sort of like my pace. I have nothing to disclose, and I want you just to recognize the population pyramids. Obviously, we're going to be changing dramatically from what used to be called the age pyramid to the age rectangle. And the red area is where the baby boomers are, and I think probably many people in this room might be around that age. But what's really important is to say that 1 in 5 people will be over 65 from the year 2030 to the year 2050. And that's quite a doubling of the population since the year 2000. So we care about people at all ages, but you know, it's going to be a huge change in people living longer, and this is the part we've been working on. The Interagency Forum on Aging-Related Statistics is one of two forums that the federal government brings together many federal agencies to put data together from national surveys, for example. I work on the aging one, and many other colleagues work on the children one, but we both look at the same indicator, which has to do with air quality. So I just wanted to show that over time we've been improving the percentage of people who are exposed to poor air contaminants that could actually cause many other poor health outcomes, including cardiovascular disease. Where you live really matters, and if you can see California here, Southern California, you know, these are counties that are shaded that have had poor air quality during some period during the year 2010. And so it does matter where you live, and you could have zero heart risk factors for heart disease and still, because of where you live, be exposed to contaminants that could end you up in the hospital or dead. In the Children's Health Indicators, they did an update, I think was mentioned this year, and they do a little bit of different data, but they also show, I wanted just to put the ETS, environmental tobacco smoke, and show over time how that's happened. Those are the indicators in the children's book. Heart disease, as has been mentioned earlier, really affects every single age group across the lifespan, and it affects women more than men. And it actually, there have been estimates that there's about 50 to 60,000 excess deaths attributed to air pollution, but there's been others that have modeled that said it could be as much as 100,000 people that have died due to air pollution. What's, I think, really amazing is that cardiovascular disease kills more women than the next 7 causes of death combined, and more than men. And obviously, just like there are with many health diseases, equity is a huge problem, so minorities suffer most and die sooner. So that's why we're piggybacking on the National Prevention Strategy. Does everyone know about the National Prevention Strategy that's part of the Affordable Care Act that the Surgeon General is leading? Well, there was a Million Hearts campaign at HHS, and you know, they've got their ABCs of blood pressure and cholesterol and so forth, but we said, hey, what about the environment? So we're trying to add the letter E to the Million Hearts campaign and target our health prevention to people, women and men, but mostly older women, living with heart disease right now, and also educating the population of people who could be at risk. We also want to educate healthcare professionals, and we've done a number of webinars, and again, Susan and Wayne have been very instrumental in all of that outreach. We still have 124 million people in 2010 living in counties with poor air quality. It's a lot of people. You know, we're 314 million people, so that's an awful lot of people that are exposed to one of the 6 principal air pollutants. And the two that we're most concerned about for cardiovascular disease, also COPD and asthma, are ozone and particulate matter. So again, I just mentioned about educating health policymakers. I think, you know, some of the policy has to do with court order deadlines for some new developments on standards on particulate matter, and also lawsuits that sometimes try to block the EPA from doing its job as part of the Air Quality Act. So again, I mentioned it was going to complement the Green Heart campaign, the Million Hearts campaign is, and reduce, you know, the goal of the Million Hearts campaign is to reduce heart attacks by 1 million people over the next 5 years. We are going to be focusing in February on heart disease and the environmental effects too. So we'll have information for all of you who might be interested, and you can let me know afterwards if you want to be on our monthly listserv that will share information and materials to educate folks about this at the community level. We have a really simple tool, Air Quality Now, airnow.gov. And this is information that you can be found even in your USA Today if you're staying at some hotel in the area that lists the air quality index. And it shows for multi-pollutants, you know, both PM and ozone. And it's also disseminated throughout all the weather channels and so forth. You can even, for you high-tech folks, have a mobile phone app and be made aware of when there's going to be poor air quality days, because our intervention, because we haven't been able to eliminate the hazard out of our lives, we still have to recommend that when it is a poor air quality day, people reduce their activity. That's the test, but it could be a life-saving one. So to me, this is a simple prevention intervention. Okay, so these are the messages, you know, about reducing your exposure to particulate matter. I can tell you that if you live in a house, you're not you can be exposed to particulate matter. Ozone doesn't penetrate walls, but PM does. So it is really important to simply check the air quality forecast. And for those of us living on the East Coast, we're following the weather right now with Sandy. But you can also we can predict ahead of time what the air quality is going to be and when people, you know, in certain of pre-existing conditions or of age might also be told about things. I just wanted to quickly talk about sustainability and about the systems approach to dealing with health or any problem. And I think Eisenhower was actually really right, that if a problem can't be solved, we have to enlarge it. We have to look beyond the obvious little problems that are too close to home, and maybe it needs to be expanded. It needs to look, example, at the social determinants of health. So I'm sure you've seen the three circles with, or what they also call the three pillars of sustainability that Brundtland talked about in 1987, of environment, economy, and society. EPA is working on a number of sustainability tools, and one of them has to do with the triple value framework, which is now, this is a tool, it's really for decision makers. And I kind of think about this parallel with the health and all policies goal that's part of the national prevention strategy too, about looking at all the sectors that are affected and how we always are doing trade-offs, but looking at the economic situation, looking at the societal, which is where health is included, and then the environment. This framework has got a dashboard with all the data that exists in the United States. It's being done for Region 1, and I think they're going to be trying to replicate it for the Chesapeake Bay and for Puget Sound as well. And this is looking at the nutrients running off from agriculture as a business. People make money by, you know, growing crops, but there are side effects and there are implications. And I can even tell you an interesting another model that's been used on sustainability is something called the DIPSR model, which has been around and was invented in Europe. And they actually, I think, help maybe reframe issues when climate change can be described as being a driver, but in the model that folks have really dug down, hunkered down at EPA on the definitions of the drivers, the pressures, the society, the inputs, and then the, I think that it's the choices, but R, I can't think of the R word, but it's not results, it's choices. But the they have the state being the climate. And so if you think of climate not having a fight about science issues, but actually this is what we have to deal with and all the inputs that come in to deal with it. You might be having people move forward to deal with the extreme heat events, dealing with the problem of lack of fish because of flooding or drought or so forth. So I think these are, again, tools for policymakers to look at complex problems that we deal with in the environment and public health. I just want to give a couple examples of some intergenerational programs. I know Peter can do a really good job about things in Ohio, but I'll just say that there was a young girl who heard they didn't have enough drivers to get Meals on Wheels delivered to families. And so this young woman in Ann Arbor said, why don't we, instead of when we have to clock our miles behind the car in driver's ed, 50 miles a year or whatever it is before you can get your driver's ed license, why don't we deliver meals? So parents are helping to deliver meals now in Ann Arbor. And they replicated this in Austin, Texas. They replicated it in Grand Rapids. And so now they've got thousands of students, and actually at Michigan and Arizona too, that are now helping to deliver meals. And this was really important with the cost of gasoline going up, and they were going to have to cut back on meals. And they're also creating an intergenerational relationship with some people who are homebound that may never see see anybody but for when the meals are dropped off. So that's kind of really cool. That's kind of a threefer, as I call it. Meals on Wheel and More. These were three wheels. This is in Austin, Texas, where they've got college students. Again, there have been foundations. They've never been successful in helping to feed, you know, some basic needs for homebound folks that were poor. And now they've got college students and others pulling meals to the homes. Again, having cars off the road even. No pollution there. Just getting healthy meals to the people who need them. And I'll just say in New York City, too, another thing about idling school buses, and I'll just say that diesel exhaust is going to be a IARC number one human carcinogen. It's going to be coming out with a monograph next year. So diesel exhaust is bad. So instead of having buses idle during the day when kids were in school, they found a need of people who couldn't get from their apartments in New York City to where the fresh foods were with the fresh farmers. And so they literally have the bus go pick up the seniors at the housing and then go to the farmers market, bring them back, and still take the kids home at the end of the day. Pretty cool. So there's some pretty innovative things. And I know I want to make sure everyone's got time, but I want to say that we had a Building Healthy Communities for Active Aging Award. And I don't know how many of you guys knew that we've had a task force, a group at APHA that was on healthy communities, building healthy communities for healthy aging. Aging begins the day you're born, throughout the life course. And all these interventions really deal with people of all ages. So the beneficial, this is now dealing with the built environment. When we build certain ways, we can provide options for transportation, options for active mobility, options for connecting to parks and green spaces. And we also, at the same time, then can reduce pollution from whether it's from the air, the water, sprawl, less traffic, more open space, and actually human interaction by people stopping by one another on the street where you can't do that when you're in a car. So mental health is actually improved. And there's lots of studies that do that, and I won't go through them all. But I did want to show you the benefits of the first 20 years of the Clean Air Act. And you can just look about the health benefits. So people, when they think of health, don't always think of EPA, but that is part of our mission. We may need your help more than other times, given some of the people that are representing some of us in Congress. But I think it's really important to see that like 160,000 premature deaths is what the progress has happened to date. And obviously, with further regulations, we could do much better, too. And I guess some of the top 10 things that have strengthened America, I don't know if you've thought of that, but removing lead from gasoline. Kids that were born in the year 2000 don't have to worry about it from the source of gasoline, not that it's out of our environment totally. Removing acid rain and clearing secondhand smoke. Again, 20-year anniversary of the secondhand smoke report from the EPA. And then obviously efficiency and emission controls from cars and other vehicles. So I guess my last message that actually I thought was pretty cool. Every year we have an intergenerational poetry essay photography contest, the Springs in the Arts, for Rachel Carson. This is the 50th year, you probably know of Silent Spring. And every year we have really cool entries. And this year we had, it was actually the Rachel Carson Sense of Water in name of the 40th anniversary of the Clean Water Act. And so here's a quote from the guy who wrote Jonathan Livingston Steagall. I don't know if I could come up with Richard Bach, who's apparently related to the musician, but anyway. What the caterpillar calls the end of the world, the master calls a butterfly. So I just thought that that would be a little bit of wisdom to leave you with. I usually leave them with Tom Lehrer, but I thought something more positive. So there's, and we have a guidebook on growing smarter, living healthier. I can just say there's great work with our colleagues, and here's Chris Tuchinski, and I don't know if Tony's still here, but Chris from CDC and NCEH working on the health impact assessments and so forth, too, and how important everything's interconnected. Thanks.